down widens in Turkey after a failed coup attempt. This morning, the local Turkish community speaks out.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, and you can watch the show with video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. Just ahead, local members of this city's vibrant Turkish community speak out on the coup, the attempted coup in their homeland. Get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, the music and inspiration of Jacksonville's Don't Miss a Beat and the story of a globe-trotting bishop who came back home to Jacksonville to start a brand new life, all of that ahead. But first this hour, the Turkish government's crackdown after a military coup attempt widened Monday into a sweeping purge, cutting a big swath through that country's security services and reaching deeply into the government bureaucracy and the political and business elites in Turkey. WJCT's Ryan Bank the other day spoke with a Jacksonville native living in Istanbul who watched the attempted coup unfold. Let's listen.
The tanks and military began rolling in Friday night. That's when we got the first reports. What did you see, and what was the mood and word on the street shortly before that took place?
Well, actually, a couple of days leading up to Friday, a couple of days before, we started noticing special forces like army fatigues walking around Istanbul. And it wasn't really normal, and there was kind of a very tense vibe in the air already.
President Erdogan has leveled blame against a specific person, exiled cleric Fethullah Gulen, for fomenting opposition that led to the coup. Can you tell me a little bit about who Gulen is and, you know, what he means to Turks?
Well, there are several, conspiracy theories going around. This is a very popular one because Erdogan and Fethullah Gulen have had a major falling out years ago. They were political allies, and when the power structure started changing and Erdogan was kind of going more for a power grab, it just didn't work after that between them.
What's the mood of Turks in the aftermath of this attempted uprising? Excuse me.
Well, I mean, it's split. You have the people that are celebrating in the squares and in the streets, and then you have, you know, everyone else who is suffering psychologically. You know, it's a torn country. The people are very distraught. You know, they're scared for their futures. They're scared for the futures of their children.
Right.
And it is sort of supposed that the coup took place because they knew that he was going to be making all of the purges in the government, the judiciary, the police. He always intended to do this.
Christy O'Daniel is a Jacksonville native living in Istanbul, Turkey. Christy, thanks for talking with us.
And that was WJCT reporter Ryan Bank. Now, this attempted coup in Turkey is inevitably turning the spotlight, as Ryan said, on Fethullah Gulen, the primary political rival of Turkish President Erdogan. Gulen lives in seclusion in Pennsylvania. Turkey is vowing to root out Gulen's allies after an already deep purge of its army, police, and judiciary. They accuse Gulen supporters of orchestrating this abortive military takeover, which killed more than 200 people, and they're calling for his extradition from the United States. Gulen has denied any involvement with this attempted coup, suggesting that Erdogan staged it as an excuse for a crackdown in the country. What we can confirm is that Gulen is the titular head of a worldwide movement, and he has been linked to a network of more than 160 charter schools operating all over America. He has in the past been linked to several schools in Jacksonville, the River City Science Academy schools, although administrators at those schools say they are no longer formally linked to the Gulen movement. We are beginning the hour with a closer look at all this as we speak with Akif Aydin. He's former president and director of the Istanbul Cultural Center of Jacksonville, and he joins us by phone. Mr. Aydin, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Melissa. Good morning.
Good morning. And to our callers, what are your questions about the attempted military coup in Turkey? As we speak with our local Turkish community, give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org, email and tweet the show. And so this morning, we are being told that Fethullah Gulen is denying any involvement with the attempted coup in Turkey. President Erdogan calling for his extradition from the United States. Your thoughts this morning about the two competing narratives on who's responsible for the coup?
Melissa, there are many conspiracies behind of the coup, and there is no clear motivation yet detected who is really behind. And Mr. Gulen immediately denied any involvement, him or his participants. But from the very beginning of the attempt started on Friday, Prime Minister of Turkey, President Erdogan, they claimed that Gulen was behind of it. Yet the intelligence service in Turkey couldn't detect this attempt until the very last moment. Everybody is suspicious about how they kind of know the motivation and the plotters are Gulen associated, yet they didn't know anything about the coup that was very organized. It seems it's very large participant within the military, in the high-ranking people. So Erdogan has been slandering Gulen movement from last 3 years after he was involved a large corruption scandal, like Erdogan and his cabinet, called by prosecutors and judges as part of a large corruption scandal. And I think since then, he has been targeting Gulen and slandering him to save himself. This is somehow the dominating perception among the Turkish people. And this last coup attempt, it somehow is believed that it's a staged coup that Erdogan can consolidate, consolidating his power and to purge all Gulen associates from government and to really going towards to full dictatorship. This is one way that people see. And another way, in fact, that some other people give credit to Erdogan, yeah, Mr. Gulen could have such relations or, you know, really be behind of it. But I personally, I have been inspired by Mr. Gulen, and I have read his books and listened to his, different preachers. And the Gulen, that's my understanding, has been promoting education, dialogue, peaceful Islam, moderate Islam. He's a retired preacher, by the way, and he has not promoted to open mosque, neither madrasa. He promoted open education, and then the reason is to solution to ignorance, disunity, is educational institutions. That's what he has been for 40 years. And to me, I doubt that Gulen is behind of this because, like a person dedicating his entire life for education and dialogue, come up with a coup. It doesn't make sense to me.
And if you're just tuning in, as we speak right now with Akif Aydin, former president and director of the Istanbul Cultural Center of Jacksonville, we'll go to your calls in a moment as the crackdown in Turkey widens in the attempt of, after the abortive coup attempt that took place there over the weekend. The number to call us with your questions is 549-2937. And as you mentioned, you've been inspired by the writings and ideas of Fethullah Gulen. He's seen as a moderate Sunni Muslim, publicly supporting scientific education, interfaith dialogue, market capitalism, democracy, has publicly condemned terrorism and political violence. The Gulen movement, also known as Hizmet or Service, has adherents around the world. Let me ask you as a follow-up. In this country, followers of Fethullah Gulen have built secular schools, charter schools, emphasizing math and science. More than 150 charter schools, several chains across the United States. Here in Jacksonville, the chain of River City Science Academy schools, they say they do not have a formal tie to the Gulen movement, but they had in the past been inspired by his teachings. We're also learning, though, that there have been FBI and Department of Labor investigations into some of these schools in other states. What can you tell us about the charter school movement in this country as it relates to Fethullah Gulen?
That's a good question. I think there's clearly those charter schools are funded by the people who are inspired by them. There is no doubt about it. So, like in Jacksonville, I was one of the founding members of the charter school in Jacksonville. But it is public charter schools and funded by the public money, totally have accountability towards the district. Nobody can call it Gulen School, but it is definitely founded by the people who are inspired by the Gulen, but it is secular schools, and it is for the sake of bringing higher education and choices to the parents, and that's what the Gulen promotes. It's not good to really say it's a Gulen School. Definitely, it cannot be called Gulen Schools, but it can be called the schools founded by people who inspired by Gulen because of dedicating their lives to the education.
Right. And let me ask you as well, Akif, as a follow-up, critics of the charter school movement, and let's be clear, there are supporters and opponents of the flourishing charter school movement in this country. They have long been critical of the Gulen schools, in particular because in many states, the schools have been one of the most aggressive applicators for HB1 worker visas, bringing in teachers, in some cases, Turkish teachers to teach English in this country rather than hiring English teachers who are already here in this country. If, in fact, Hizmet service, the Gulen movement, is one of the driving forces behind this attempted coup in Turkey, what is your response to those who are expressing concerns that a charter network has grown in this country that could have been providing de facto support for the attempted overthrow of a NATO-allied government?
First of all, again, I don't believe that any Gulen participants are behind of the coup. When we look at his philosophy, his teachings, the promotions in the movement, it's very peaceful, educational. So to me, this is more Erdogan's conspiracy to purge, just sweeping purge from government and to consolidating his power and to marching towards more dictatorship, because Erdogan is really in that character, and he is the biggest support to ISIS in the region, and he has not arrested any single ISIS members in Turkey, and it is evident that Turkey is the largest, supportive of ISIS in the region. And Erdogan is aware of this, and Erdogan wants to create a scapegoat, all-purpose scapegoat for him and his policies. And Gulen is perfect for him so far, that whatever has happened in Turkey, that he immediately blames on Gulen. So therefore, there is no evidence, like as Secretary of State Kerry said, definitely if there is any evidence, not allegations, it will be very credible. And I personally, too, if there is any evidence, I will definitely withdraw my support from any activities. But there is no evidence. They are all allegations, all slandering about what's going on. The second thing, part of your question is, I think, charter schools over here have been extremely successful. And when you look at the teacher ratios and, the Turkish-American teachers are in very minority, about 5% to 10% of the entire teachers. And, in the United States, I think one of the best thing part of this country is to giving opportunity to bring people, intellectual, dedicated scholars, educators, from other countries, and in our university systems, if you look at the universities in the United States, most of professors, they are foreigners. They are from other countries. And intentionally, this is part of the educational system. I don't want to call exploit their intellectuals, but to benefit from their intellectuals, and to giving this opportunity to our community. And I think for that reason, having Turkish-American teachers to be part of the charter schools, there is no problem with it, because this is in the, all the college system in the United States. Yet, this is, everything is under the legal process. Everything is under the law system. Whatever is the law system and legal process is allowing, those people are somehow applying and recruited based on those processes. So there is no process or no recruitment against any law. And again, they are in very minority, and I think they are going to criminal background check, and all other criteria are applied to them. And I have not seen any single Turkish American teachers in especially locally for the charter school in Jacksonville. So they are highly qualified teachers and very dedicated.
Okay.
And I think it is not just to call and to doubt such kind of things for them.
And let me ask you as a follow up, without focusing in any specific way on the Jacksonville schools. A recent 60 Minutes report on the Gulen movement of charter schools around the country looked at allegations of schools in other states skimming off taxpayer money to Gulen-related enterprises. And the Leslie Stahl report interviewed former teachers with Gulen movement schools in other states who alleged that the ultimate goal of these schools, these taxpayer-funded charter schools in the U.S., is to funnel tax dollars back into the Gulen movement in Turkey. What's your response to the allegations that were made in the 60 Minutes report?
Okay, first of all activities of schools are under scrutiny of the local district. All financial reports, everything, you know, several times a year, they come and inspect everything financially and other ways. And if there was any such thing detected, definitely our local district would not allow the operation. And the teachers over there and parents or students, if they had any sentiment towards such kind of allegations, definitely they will have reported to, I urge them to report, first of all, to our authorities. But I think there are all allegations slandering, because the same thing, part of the Erdogan campaign to slander Mr. Gulen and the Hizmet movement and the participants within the Hizmet movement. But that might be true that teachers from their salary, like we all donate money to our local churches, to nonprofit organizations, this is individual preference and choice. And if Turkish American teachers somehow donated from their salaries or their income, some percentage or just some amounts to local non-profit organizations, it is their preferences. But in school, there is no way, and the principal or anyone in the charter school can really touch to the public money, because everything is under the control of local district.
Okay, and let's go to your calls now for Akif Aydin, former president of the Istanbul Cultural Center of Jacksonville. The number to call in is 549-2937. Let's begin with Paul in Orange Park. Paul, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Good morning. It just so happens that I majored in English in college and am certified to teach English grade 6 through 12. When I went to a job fair, I spoke with six principals, and they all said they didn't need English teachers, and finding out that people from any other country are coming in and taking the jobs that I could have been hired for is disturbing, because I believe that American citizens are best going to be taught English by American citizens.
And, okay, and thanks for sharing that. To be clear, that allegation hasn't been made here in Jacksonville, but it has in other states. But, Paul, thanks for the call.
By the way, Melissa, the teachers, Turkish-American teachers, to my knowledge, and they never taught English. They teach math and science. So it is not logical to have someone without, native born into teach English. It doesn't make sense.
Peter on the South Side. Go ahead, Peter.
Yes, hi. Good morning. My understanding is that Mr. Galan is a Sufi Muslim, and they seem to focus more on the mystic and the spiritual side of Islam. But I wasn't aware that they were politically active at all. Perhaps your speaker could address that.
Thank you for that question. Akif.
Yes, he is known like a Sufi follower and the master Rumi, who happened to live in Turkey in 13th century, and definitely he can be called as a Sufi in one way because he is very spiritual, and now he lives in the United States since 99, and he is in South exile. His entire days is in a kind of exclusive to worship and to God, and that he doesn't have any political involvement. Yet, he might be concerned with what's going on in the world and in Turkey. That's for each and every of us, it's possible, and definitely it's our right and responsibility to be concerned about what's going on around us. But it doesn't mean that you are a political actor, and definitely he cannot be called a political actor.
And he came to this country, it's been reported, because Turkey's then secular government tried him in absentia for attempting to overthrow the government. He was later acquitted. He's remained in exile in Pennsylvania ever since. What's your reaction to the Turkish president now demanding from the U.S. government that he be extradited back to Turkey?
Yes, he came to the United States in 1999 because of the secular. At the time, military was very strict secular, and there was a postmodern coup attempt in 1997 in Turkey, and as a result of that coup attempt, it was done by the secular elite in the military. There was no conspiracy at that time, Gulen involvement in that coup, definitely. But Gulen was a victim of that military, and he had to come to the United States, and since then he has been living over here. So Mr. Gulen, I think his the demand by Turkish government to get him back to Turkey, Secretary of State John Kerry said, if there is any legitimate evidence, definitely should be considered seriously. And I believe our legal system and the agreements, international agreements between the United States and Turkey, will allow the extradition of Gulen. But I doubt that there will be any evidence presented by the government, because after Turkish government heard from the Secretary of State, John Kerry, asked the evidence, not allegations, they got so mad. They said President Erdogan and Prime Minister said, the coup itself is evidence. What else evidence are you expecting? So in their view, I think, without any evidence, and they want to immediately associate the school with Mr. Gulen and use this as evidence to...
And to be clear, Akif, what you are saying on the record is that the River City Science Academies in Jacksonville are not run by the Gulen movement. Is that right?
So, once again, there is no charter schools you can call Gulen schools, but there are charter schools founded by Turkish-American people who are inspired by Gulen. And the Riverside Charter School, again, is not a Gulen charter school. It is a public charter school. But there are some teachers, there might be some teachers, inspired by Mr. Gulen. That's very clear.
Okay. Let's go now to Therese in San Marco. Hi, Therese. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a teacher, and I've read a lot about this movement. And I think the truth is in the middle in a lot of this. Secularism for women is freedom, and anything that backs against secularism is a problem. Separation of church and state is important, and I'm a teacher, so I'm for public education, public funding, and the lack of religious influence in that funding and the grabbing of those funds by any religion. However, because I'm a math and chemistry teacher, I will say to you that the problem in this country is a lot of the teaching went downhill over four decades. Academic, hardcore academic quality, competitive education is something parents are seeking hard in this country. I was in a school in somewhere near Jacksonville, not in Jacksonville, not in Duval, but when I stand in a room of 15 teachers and not one of them has a degree in physics, being asked to teach physics or physical science, what do you do as a mom, because I'm a mother of three very competitive daughters, what do you do with that? How do you get your kids well-educated? So if Boulin is really for secularism and was ejected by a secular government, I don't buy that. So if he, I would ask how many women are in these schools and judge everything by how they treat their girls. Judge I'm sure he offers a competitive education. To that, I would say we need to fund ours. Have a state tax in the state of Florida. Start paying your teachers something, and you'll get people to apply that are qualified to teach the subjects they teach.
Okay.
So the answer is it scares everybody with Boulin. It's fix what's wrong here. He has a right to be here. He has a right to for someone to pay for his education in free market system. Let him pay for it then. But I want to know how many women are in those schools. And that would be my last question.
Okay. Thank you so much for that, Therese. Akif Adin.
Okay. So, first of all, this school is definitely teaching in the secular principles. There is no religious education in the Riverside and in any charter school. It is 100% secular education. And Boulin and the participants of the movement are definitely firm believer of secular system, no religious education, no religious government. But personally, they might be religious. This might be true for any of us in the United States. You might attend a church, be very devout, but you are perfectly secular in the system. So I think we should not get confused secularism and individual dedication or individual devout or individual spirituality. And in the charter schools, there is no religious education. There is no motivation religiously. It's all purely secular. And Boulin, in fact, well, you know, Erdogan himself is very conservative Muslim, and he is, I will say, he is an Islamist. And the way that, one of the way I think that Erdogan sees Boulin as a threat to him, because Boulin is promoting secularism. But Erdogan himself wants to have a government based on Islamism. So Islamism is somehow turn Islam into ideology, take away from religion. And Boulin is against this. Boulin is against of Islamism to take Islam into ideology. Boulin believes that people have rights to exercise their faith and belief, yet they should not impose to anyone, and they should not make part of the government.
And let's be clear that the local schools have long waiting lists and are well rated, and they are expanding in this area and have drawn bright students, to be sure. And so given that context here in Jacksonville, let me ask you again as a follow-up. Critics of these schools in other states have prompted FBI and Department of Labor investigations. We haven't seen that here in Florida, to my knowledge, but there is certainly a perception that's being debated online with more than one point of view, that the schools have a purpose beyond the stated goal of providing high-quality education with a strong emphasis on math and science. Those who disagree say that the chatter online is simply Islamophobia, a way to discredit and criticize these Turkish teachers and administrators. What's your reaction to those two competing narratives that we're seeing in the discussion about these schools and this movement?
First of all, there has not been any anything in just the investigation by FBI here locally. And I think there was only a couple of schools across the United States. And so, but it is open. It is, you know, there have been many auditing in the school, financial and other ways. And I think every time when there is any audit to the school in the normal processes, you know, all the, you know, the reports are like in the perfect way. And this school is one of the best schools in our local community with a very high standard of education, dedicating teachers. Most of them are Americans. They are local. Again, you know, about over 80% of the teachers, they are our local people, and they are Americans. And some, again, you know, in very minority, Turkish Americans. And they are, again, part of, you know, our community. They are holding either green card or they are American citizens, you know, they are, but they are Turkish Americans. So there is no way we can actually discriminate people based on their identity, based on their nationality. That is what makes United States, you know, a wonderful country.
And
if they are... Yes.
Yeah, I just want to take one more call. Let's take one more call as we're running a little short on time. Adam in Jacksonville. Go ahead, Adam.
Yes, Melissa. I have a question for your guest. Does your guest think that the Kurds were part of the coup? Since the Erdogan government has been killing thousands of Kurds in the past 2 years in their war against the Kurds, and there are a lot of Kurdish sources, actually, that they say a lot of these detained military personnel are Kurd, since they say that basically it was a game against the Kurds. He was trying to clean up his military out of all of these Kurds that basically are not trusted. So please, and ask him also, what are the future of 25 million Kurds in Turkey in the coming years? And thank you.
Okay, thanks, Adam. Akif Aydin.
Yeah, it's true that Erdogan is oppressing the Kurdish population, which is about 15-20% of the entire population and basically located in the eastern and southeast of Turkey, bordering with Syria, Iraq. So Kurdish people, unfortunately, they have been persecuted by Erdogan's government very recently. And there are many cities in Turkey bombed by the military with the order of Erdogan. And there is a huge oppression towards the Kurdish people in Turkey. That's true. But I doubt that there's curse behind of this coup. And I think there is no ground for them to be part of
it. Who do you think was behind it then?
I think there is more than one group behind of the coup. It seems the way the coup exercise is kind of a stage. It's very evident kind of stage coup because it was not attempt to be successful. I think it was attempt to fail. And who is going to benefit from the failure is definitely Erdogan because he is now consolidating power and purging you know, all the oppositions from the government. So I think there are, you know, several groups in the military. They, in the beginning, might have agreed on the coup to topple Erdogan. But I also think some of those groups might be directly connected with the intelligence services in Turkey and then to Erdogan. And the intention was to really not be cooperative and to just attempt such a coup to give power to Erdogan and also to give the opportunity to purge those positions in the military so Erdogan can have a fully controlled military and then he can really just march to his purpose of purging all the oppositions from the government and to take the control fully and, you know, to, because he wants to be president. He wants to establish a president system in Turkey. He has been pushing towards that for a long time, but somehow probably people were not convinced. And now I think after this coup attempt, I expect that he will run for re-election again this year, and then he will be elected as a president. Not he is president now, but the Turkish system is parliamentary system, not like United States system with presidents and Congress. It is more prime minister, and president in Turkey is more ceremonial. So Erdogan wants to get a fully executive power under control of presidency. That's what he wants to turn Turkey. And then at that time, he can actually do whatever he wants. That's
right.
What I kind of, I see how it's too benefiting for that purpose.
Well, we thank you so much for joining us this morning with your thoughts and insight into this. Thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Melissa, for having me.
Akif Aydin, former president and director of the Istanbul Cultural Center of Jacksonville, on the line for us this morning. And much more still ahead later, the music and inspiration of Jacksonville's Don't Miss a Beat. But up next, how a globe-trotting bishop traded in the church for art.
Eminent Domain gives some of the oldest ranches in Texas to a pipeline company. But what is fair value?
Honestly, I don't think it's possible to give just compensation. On the other hand, we have to set some sort of dollar amount and proceed from there.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Rumble in West Texas next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hello, this is Todd Smith, your Deputy Director for the City of Jacksonville's Emergency Preparedness Division. Disasters can strike with little to no notice. Create your disaster kit now, including water, non-perishable foods, batteries, flashlight, weather radio, and important documents. Visit jacksready.com for more information and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
If you're looking for the best blues show, look to the Blues Horizon. Each week, join me for the best blues, both classic and contemporary. Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 p.m. on WJCT 89.9 FM radio. Take a ride with us to some unknown places of musical light and shade. Blues Horizon, every Monday night at 11 on 89.9 FM. So many roads.
Welcome back. Well, if you're a fan of Instagram, here's a chance to post a beautiful picture this week that's creative and also demonstrates your love of public radio. It's our I Love WJCT contest. Every Friday, we're going to publish our favorite Insta photo of the week with the hashtag I Love WJCT. We're going to put it in our newsletter, First Read. Subscribe to First Read at WJCTnews.org. Now, with this contest, we want you to be creative. This week's theme is show us how much you love public radio with your Instagram image. Use the hashtag ILovePublicRadio. Find a creative and visual way to show us on Instagram why you love 89.9 and look for the winner this Friday in our First Read newsletter. Well, Anaseo Galleries opened recently in the shops of Avondale, and it's the living embodiment of proprietor Jacob Danner's travels around the world and the artwork he collected. The gallery is the realization of his dream to introduce this lovingly curated collection of paintings, antiques, jewelry, even fashion to North Florida collectors and collectors worldwide. Now, Danner used to be a priest and then a bishop with the Evangelical Episcopal Church. He even served as a curator for the Vatican Library. But his passion for art is the rule of the day in 2016 as Jacob Danner joins the show. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. It's great to be back.
And Anaseo is a Greek word that means come to life again. So yes. This is a new chapter for you.
To recover life, to be restored, to be revived. And I believe that for both arts and the artists and myself, yes.
You traveled the world for decades collecting art all along the way, all while serving as a bishop. And at what point did you decide, I want to start this new venture, leave the church, you know, leave the post in the church and open up an art gallery?
Well, 2.5 years ago when I came back to Jacksonville and transition time, my mom's health was failing. And turning the big 6-0 this year, you know. I am still that same person to so many. I still do lots of marriage counseling and but a walk through my gallery will show you that you're practically in church.
It really is extraordinary. The collection in your Anaseo Gallery includes renowned international oil paintings, really unusual jewelry. There's fashion and all kinds of stuff that really you can't find anywhere else in this area.
That's right.
It's a unique collection.
That's right. A lot of it you can't find even in the Southeast. I've traveled all over the world to get it, and there's incredible artists, and so much of it is all handmade. It's not, you know, mass-produced things.
What's your criteria for what you pick to exhibit in this space and sell?
Beauty.
Just beauty.
It's got to be something that speaks to me, calls to me. I mean, my whole buying philosophy was, you know what, if it doesn't sell, it's going to end up in my living room. So I better like it.
And what's the reaction been since you opened your doors?
Well, very positive. Very good. I mean, like any new business, it's a long view that you have to build a clientele, a client base. And So it's been fun.
What's it like, too, to go from being a man of the cloth to now you're an art gallery owner? That's a really big change. You don't hear about that very often.
Well, even as a priest and a bishop, I was not your traditional kind of cleric. A lot of the kids used to call me the cool priest.
Oh, really?
And my whole style. I mean, I was almost a narrative storyteller in my preaching style, and always a poetic, romantic orientation to my approach to life and to ministry. And, you know, I'm still that same person, you know.
Now, you weren't a Catholic priest, but I understand that you were at one time a curator for the Vatican Library.
Yes.
What was that experience like?
Well, it was incredible. They have this amazing collection of artifacts that they have 5 stories below ground that most of the public never gets to see. And there's a lot of it that... And unless they reproduce it and do this incredible line of museum edition reproductions, the public wouldn't see it. So they had a mission to generate revenue to restore and maintain this collection, as well as to expose the public to these great pieces. Mm-hmm. And so they hired me as a consultant to kind of look through, I mean, literally 60,000 pieces of art, artifact, documents, maps in the course of a weekend, and selected some for the collection.
How exciting. And do you see art as a new medium, a new way of channeling your spiritual needs and ministering to people through art, through the beauty and uplifting power of art?
Absolutely. I mean, I believe God was the first artist. I mean, if you believe that God created the worlds, which I do, and I'm just going to take that as fact. And you know, it's just, all you have to do is look at the diversity of color, shape, texture, sound, the wonder of it. And I'm still that boy that has never lost a childlike wonder for the natural world. And so that's where it starts. It captivates the heart. It inspires. Indeed, the hills are alive with the sound of music, you know, those mm-hmm. things. And all you have to do is walk in nature to realize that how important art is.
Well, it's exciting to talk about this with you because the Anazao Galleries is such an incredible addition to the local art scene. In the shops of Avondale, he's proprietor and former Episcopal Bishop Jacob Danner. So good to talk to you, and thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. All right, Melissa.
And in a moment, the music and inspiration of Jacksonville's own Don't Miss a Beat.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, GOP primetime convention speakers in Cleveland focus on the theme of law and order, analysis of Donald Trump's message, its resonance with Republican voters, and its possible appeal in the general election.
At 10 o'clock on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First are proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Well, finally, this hour, it's only been a few years since Grammy Award-winning drummer and renowned performer Ulysses Owens Jr. and his family started Don't Miss a Beat. It's a local nonprofit blending music, art, academics, and civic engagement to inspire and enlighten kids in Riverside and Brooklyn here in Jacksonville. And Don't Miss a Beat has really made an impact, with virtually all of the children and teens in the program on track with improved behavior at school and big plans for their future. But Don't Miss a Beat wants to expand to a year-round program and help out even more children. So they're holding their first ever gala event this weekend, A Night at the Cabaret. We've got a preview now with Ulysses Owens Jr. and guest artist C. Anthony Bryant, director of the group's children's choir. Good to see you both.
Good to see you, Melissa.
Good to see you.
And first of all, congratulations. We've known through the data for years that music education has a proven positive impact on kids socially and academically.
Absolutely.
Don't Miss a Beat has really proven that in real life just over the last few years in Jacksonville.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that we had to understand, Melissa, was first we had to be committed and we had to create alternative ways for our kids to learn using the arts. Because I think many times if a child doesn't learn traditionally or they have certain struggles, then we write them off. But to me, the beauty of music is that it's always able to be created. And I think it's the same thing with the child of a, or the mind of a child. Man, you can always stimulate it and give them a new path and a new way to learn and be creative. And that's what we do at Don't Miss a Beat. I always say we give a yes to every no.
See, Anthony Bryant, you direct the children's choir. You've performed with Beyonce. You've performed at the White House.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Very exciting. And you work with these kids. And what's it like when you see them get into the program?
It is a great thing to see them get into the program. They come alive where they normally would not. Normally, they would just be just run-of-the-mill kids, if you would. But the program does something to them. It gives them life. It gives them a new vibrance that is just great. It's breathtaking, honestly.
Yeah, you see them blossom, I guess,
yes.
Through the music.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
But you only have been able to work with a limited number of children.
Yeah.
You want to expand to a year-round
Absolutely.
Initiative.
I
hear from every parent. I mean, right now we have probably a circulation during the summer of about 150 kids. And I keep meeting parents, whether it's at the grocery store or wherever, where they hear about what we do. And they're like, why don't you come to this side of town? Or why are you guys not able to do more? And I'm like, well, we can't do more if we don't have more. So the gala and, you know, these kind of opportunities give us a chance to expand our donor base so we can expand the work that we do, because in wake of all the things going on right now, we need to establish a steady place for our children to really succeed and thrive. And Don't Miss a Beat is committed to that.
And so Saturday night, it's a night at the Cabaret.
Yes.
Cabaret. Tell us about it. What's going to be happening?
Yeah, so I have wonderful artists like Charles, who's going to be not only working with the kids, but the Cabaret is also about featuring talent like him. And we have some other amazing world-class artists. I flew in a set designer from New York City. For those that have not heard Charles yet, man, he's brilliant. So you're going to see him. I'm going to also perform as well. So it's going to be about a nice 90-minute show of just the best talent, but combined with the kids. And we're so excited about it.
And this
it.
Is coming up on the 23rd?
Yep, the 23rd, Saturday, 6 p.m. At our center, Edith B. Ford Center on Beaver Street. We're going to transform that center into a beautiful, beautiful space. And so we're so excited. And it is a minor cover charge. It's $25. But you can go on our website, don'tmissabeat.org, and there's more information. And, you know, reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, myself as well. You know, Charles, C. Anthony as Brian as well. We're all reachable. So.
And here are a few statistics about Don't Miss a Beat. 99% of students in the program have been not involved in any at-risk behavior. 95% of parents report increased positive peer involvement, improved behavior at school, and academic improvement in the areas of math and literacy.
Absolutely.
Which is so exciting.
It's very exciting.
And so again, it's A Night at the Cabaret.
Yes.
Saturday night.
Yes.
A fundraiser for Jacksonville's own Don't Miss a Beat.
Yes.
Go to their website, don'tmissabeat.org.
Yes.
To get your tickets and support Ulysses Owens Jr. and C. Anthony Bryant and the great group at Don't Miss a Beat. Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
And
pleasure.
Have fun out there.
Thank you.
That's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchuk. Never miss a show. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, and you can watch video on demand segments every day with our partners, TVJax.com and MetroJacksonville.com. Next on Diane Rehm, GOP primetime convention speakers in Cleveland focus on the theme of law and order. Analysis of Donald Trump's message, its resonance with Republican voters, and possible appeal in the general election. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.